From Los Angeles, California, here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, and other organizations for the purpose of improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. This seminar is entitled Revelations on the Inner Master. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about the movement.
He said, any way out? Yeah. He says, what's that? And I said, well, for the next 2 or 3 months before you go to trial, you should spend every moment you possibly have building up light units. You should just be sandbagging, because very frankly, when we got you off on the other thing so easy, we used a lot of your light units that were in reserve. You don't have too many. And you haven't really been doing very many spiritual exercises. I said, and what we've got to decide now, which we'll decide the day of sentencing, or a moment before then, is if we can bring forward all the rest of your light units and have the judge just place you on probation. And that means you're down to zero. Or whether it might be wise to save your light units and take 18 months and give you 18 months in there of intense meditation and prayer and being of assistance and build up a tremendous reservoir and have you out in 18 months and have a lot more going for you after that. He said, God, the choices. And I said, rest at ease. It is not your choice. And he says, well, whose choice is it going to be? And I said, mine. And he said, you do love me, don't you? And I said, a little bit. No, I didn't. I said, you wouldn't be here telling me all this if you didn't already know that. He says, you're the only one I can tell all this to. I said, and you're wasting my time because I already knew it. What else do you want? And it was like, well, he's not there alone. Everybody in this group is in there in some essence, in some form. And everybody who goes to prison, who serves time, is in confinement, we're in there with them in some essence, in some form. It's like no man is an island, no man stands alone. Each man's joy is joy to me, and each man's grief is his own. But that's not quite true. Their grief is our grief also. But also we can use every advantage to make that contact stronger with that inner master form who resides with you in a totality of all things. And a lot of people that I know pretty well in this lifetime, and as much as that we've been good friends and we can sit down and eat together and spend hours talking, have found out in the course of the conversation, I know what they do in their spare time and what they're talking about. And I mention it casually in conversation, and they go, oh, and just keep right on going. It's not to say, oh, look how great. That isn't even the process, because there's no way you can do that to spirit. Oh, look how great. It's not a word level. But it is one of this, that spirit, that traveler, that inner master, is cognitively aware of you all the time and is working with you all the time. And that happened to you is purposefully for you to strengthen you for the next thing that's coming up, that if you don't have this, you will not be strong enough and you will fail. And so this so-called adversity turned out to be one of where we just sit there sort of like giggling with each other, like, God, here we are deciding the whole future of the human race based upon his concept of it, and I'm sitting there laughing about it, saying, would you hurry up? I got to talk to other people. Yeah. You know, hurry up. Get to your point. Move there. That inner master is absolutely patient. This outer form here that manifests as a mystical traveler doesn't have all that. Why? Well, if we only had four people, you'd see infinite patience. I remember listening to some people when we were back in India. We were seeing one of the Swamis, and there were probably 10,000 people there. And we happened to be one of the few who happened to be able to have private interviews and so forth and so on. And after we were leaving to come out, there you'd just hear, Swami, Swami, Swami. And he'd stop to do this, Swami. And he'd do this, and then Swami. And he was over here, and he was there. And I said, yeah, he can't be an avatar. Every time somebody says Swami, he jumps and moves. I do that with a puppet. Swami, 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 Swami. I said, that's no way to live life. No wonder the guy's a little frazzled. If he had four or five of us in a group, and they had each one, he'd just take them in turn. But this man was trying to be all things to all people in the physical. Now, that's absurd. And to show the absurdity of it, those of us that had private interviews thought he was magnificent. Those who thought they should have private interviews who didn't thought he wasn't quite so hot. Those who were sitting way back who didn't get close thought he was a schnook. Those who had set ahead for appointments because they were great spiritual leaders, so he could set a time for them. When they got the answer no, they called him a fraud. And the person's exactly who they are in all of the name calling. In all of it. The name makes no difference. It is what is there that makes the difference. Last night we talked about the thing that is what it is. And on the way home last night, I said, I'd like you to plant some of this beautiful-smelling jasmine, this night-blooming jasmine, but get some daytime-blooming jasmine put out by my bedroom window here so when I'm meditating, I can smell. I love the smell. And he said, the dogs will get to it and they will urinate on it. That wasn't quite the term he used. But the dogs will overwater them, and they'll die of disease of some kind or decay. I said, well, fine. Put a fence around it. And he says, well, we did. I put a fence over those around those over there, and the dogs killed those out. I said, I don't know what you put around them that you called a fence, but the fence I'm talking about will keep them out of there. And that's the fence that I want built. Not your idea of one little string of wire and call it a fence. I want that is going to do it. And if you want to know if it's done, let one of the dogs out to see. And if it doesn't work, back to the drafting board. In other words, it has to be done in terms of it working, not in terms of us saying, that's enough. I built the fence, 2 bricks high, but that's high enough. And I was thinking back years ago, the first time I had the experience with that in what they used to call the local drugstore. At that time, they didn't sell drugs. Well, maybe. I was too young to know. But it was where they have the counters and the ice cream. And what do they call these? Fountains. Well, fizz was the other thing. And a fellow was in there after a dance with this girl, and he was really trying to show off to her. He was like a senior in high school, and I was like a 10th grader. And she was jazzy looking. And the reason I know this is because I was thinking, what a lucky guy. Now look who he's with. And it was like really paying attention to see how does he handle himself that he can rope this one. You know, so I was really like edged up pretty close, like leaning into her. You know, there was a big crowd. It was very unobtrusive that I could do that. And she said to her boyfriend, very lovingly, she said, oh, I would like to have some more syrup on my ice cream sundae. He says, sure, baby. And he turns around to the girl and he says, could we get some more syrup on the sundae? And the waitress said, no, you've got enough. And he said, no, could we have some more syrup on the ice? She doesn't have enough. She says, you heard me. I said she's got enough. He says, hey, I'll pay for it. She says, I don't care if you are or you're not going to pay for it. She's got enough. And I stood back there and I thought, how's he going to handle that? He turned out to her and he said, she says, you have enough. And she looked at him and she said, you're right, I've had enough, and got up and walked out. I went up the next day to a girl. I says, hey, what was in you? I knew her. She was in the high school. I says, what was in you that you wouldn't do that? I says, that was very poor public relations. He said, well, she goes to another school. She's dating a boy from our school. And I said, the boy you've got a crush on. She said, that's beyond the point. I said, no, I think that's precisely the point. The point is that you thought it should be one way, and it wasn't, and you were going to make it be that way at the expense of everything else. Well, it's very interesting because the fellow told the boss about that, and she was fired the next day. He just laid it out to her. And then he was telling me, he said, the boss, who was a good friend of the family, said, would you believe anybody would do this? And I said, I stood right there and heard it. He said, tell it to me. I said, I'd love to. So I laid on the syrup. He said, what would you have done had you been behind the counter? I said, okay, I'll be 5 cents more and here's some syrup. He says, would you like to work here? I said, no, not especially. No, that's not what I'm after. But it was that first moment where you, as an individual, decide you're supreme authority and nobody else can get anything from you, and you set it up and you're going to ram it through on them no matter what. And I've seen this take place in hospitals. I've been there where a person says, can I have a little drink of water? And the nurse says, no. And I've looked at the charts and didn't say anything where the doctor said, make sure they don't have any water. And I've asked the doctor later on, would it be okay if they had water? He says, oh, sure. So, well, why wouldn't the nurse do that? He said, well, some of these nurses won't do anything that they don't want to do. And I said, well, why are they nurses? He says, that's the question. And he looked at me and I said, I don't have the answer. He said, what did you do? I said, I didn't give her any water. He said, why? I said, because I didn't know what the order said. Sometimes you're not supposed to do things. But when it's like even Stephen and it's not going to hurt and the person's lying there, that's us there. And I really felt it for the first moment, the pain in that patient. Say, God, even if I could just put it in my mouth and spit it out, you know, just get rid of the cotton. Have you ever experienced that? And that milk of human kindness, these little things. When we think it's enough, we should do a little bit more. As we say, one more for the road. That little bit more. Just that little bit more. And you're entering into perfection. At that moment, no one is going to give authority over you because you're exercising the supreme rights of everybody. You're honest to God, taking care of God's business as God to God. And believe me, let me tell you, the light units like that rack up in a hurry. They actually rack up. Little books are kept, and you can go through, and a person says, oh, J.R., can you help me? And so I just pulled the record out in spirit and thumbed to it. I think, I don't know, it's 25 units, and over here 17, and this is a 45-unit one. And I say, well, why don't you just go through this one? Why don't you just endure it? They say, can I? I say, oh, sure, sure. And they endure it, and they say, that was easy, especially when you said, why don't you just go do that? The difficulty was my thinking about doing it, my feelings about doing it, and what would happen to me in the process of doing it. And I said, well, how would you know all that? They said, well, I didn't. Then why wouldn't you just do that and find out? Do you understand the simplicity of life and the beauty of it? We have a guide inside of us, the great counselor, the guiding light. God is that supreme manifestation in essence, working in us as us, pulling the separation of consciousness away from polarization to the world back into the spirit of itself. At that moment, you're not going to find out that anybody did anything for you. You're just finding out that the smart part of you was doing something that the dumb part of you was too dumb to know. And when you get to that, there won't be, oh, J.R., I'm so thankful for you. I say, hey, don't mention it. Why? J.R. did nothing. We did it. That spiritual essence that is us, the oneness. I can travel as that film, as that form, and that light. I know that. I can do that. I've demonstrated that enough. We've been working in movement for a good many years now. And there's a lot of people that's been here for, how many of you have been here at least, say, 2 years? Raise your hands. How many been here at least 3, 4, 5, 6? You see what I'm talking about? These people have been around testing, checking, testing, checking. But we would like to believe, that they're dumber than me. And I know real fast that it isn't working, and all these people here are 6 years dummies, and they don't know, and they'll never know. And that's one of the biggest lies we tell ourselves. We might want to say, hey, you know, that person's been around a long time. I think I'll just see what's going on. I remember years ago in the seminar, a lady came in, and we were doing contributions where they'd say their name and a few things. And she came in, she says, my name's so-and-so, and I'm here tonight to find out what it's all about. And I looked at her, and I said, good luck. And she wanted to know why, and I says, I've been at it for a lot of years, and I'm still trying to find out what it's all about. There's no way all can be found out in one evening. And if she could have found out before then, why was she there? See, we enter into this dance that is so inharmonious with the lovingness that we are. And yet the very nature of our life has often been betrayal and let down and hurt feelings only because we are sending out the creative power to let it take place. I was working with one of the staff members writing a letter. He got a letter from a relative. And he read it through, and later on he said, would you like to read this? And I said, well, it isn't a matter of like, but I took it like, would you read it? So I read it. I was like, okay. And he says, I'm going to answer it. I was like, fine. And I don't know how long, but let's just exaggerate and say hours later. Came back to me and said, could I show you what I've done? I'm really having a hard time. There's maybe like 2/3 of a page written and a lot scribbled out. And I says, well, I can help you. I got my dictaphone out, and in 5 minutes dictated the whole letter. And then he wrote it all back, and he says, you covered all the points, you countered it. Not as a, oh, J.R., you're great. But it was a thing of like, hey, I want to show you something, how to do this. First of all, I read the letter as a stranger. So I didn't give my emotions into the letter to have it beat me in the head. And I read the intent of the letter only on the word level. You said this and this and this, thinking I was going to do this. Well, I ain't going to do that. You just said this and this and this. And now I'm saying this and this and this. That handles that. They say, well, but what I really meant was, it's like, then you should put that in the letter. Because see, I'm the dummy. I'll only read your letter, especially on something like that. When we got all through, it was like, now, my friend, you know what the difference was? And it was, in his question, I don't know if he verbally said it, but it was like, no, what? I said, I read it detached, keeping the love for her present inside of me as I answered the letter. But I answered the letter to the letter. And so there's both the statement of fact, the fun of what's going on, but the love that pervades it. We can do this all the time, but instantly, no, you should see the letters that I ripped up and threw in the wastebasket. But he did something smart. He copied it down in a special little notebook. He says, if I have to ever have to write another letter, I got reference points in here. And this is what we need, our reference points. And if we can get them in the world, that can assist us, that can point to that, that's great. And that's why we're all around, all of us are around, and we are reference points to people in this world of how not to do, plus and how to do. How not to love and how to love. How to be at one with people and how to feel separated from people. And it's there. When we come to that inner quality, we get lost because we've sit so often in dialogue with somebody, they'll do this, and I'll do that, and they'll say this, and I'll say that, and then this, and pretty soon you're sweating with perspiration of the fight you just had with them in your head, a physical fight, and there's nobody present. No wonder you're exhausted. You fought over nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. There was nothing there except your hallucination. And so we must find those inner reference points. And yes, it would be delightfully wonderful if we could all walk through the doors of this ashram, this beautiful sanctuary of God, and open up into the beautiful thing that we are and maintain that. But do you honest to God think the world would put up with you? Do you in one wild moment think that they're going to let you parade out there as the beautiful purple rose or the beautiful lotus or beautiful jasmine or the pearl of great price or the most valuable diamond in the world? They're going to take you and hit you on the facets. They're going to take you and press you in a book to always have you. They're going to take you and extract your essence and put it in a perfume. But they're not going to let you be what you are. And we know that. And that's why we don't have that golden age out in this world. But isn't it amazing we come into a place of living love where we have that traveler consciousness present, who is a direct contact right verily into the heart of God. Exact. And people come and talk to this form, sure, because you have talking to something. And the traveler back in there listens and uses these eyes and these ears and this mouth. And as you talk, you are talking directly right to central. And the answer comes back out to you for you in that moment. And it doesn't seem to matter what the words are, but that essence of spirit comes rushing through like a wild hurricane. You say, my God, I've been turned every way but loose. My life is opening. All the things that I ever would want, my wildest imagination, it's happening. I'm being changed inwardly to a direct revelation of my spirit, a direct revelation that I can't say it doesn't exist, and I can't say it's hypnosis because it's going on, and when I go to sleep, it goes on. When I wake up, it goes on, and it's going on, and it's going on. And for the last 40 years, nothing happened. Of course, my attitude is like, well, don't you think it's about time something happened? And the answer is sure, and that's why I'm here. But also, because of the level of our conditioning, and believe it, we are conditioned here. We could call it sinful because we're so restricted. And once we say, oh, I'm not restricted, it's like you wouldn't know the truth no matter what happened. My mother used to say, you little heathen. I never knew what a heathen was, but so it was like, okay, you know. I knew she called me a lot of things. Once she called me a name, and I said, you know, you're really just talking about yourself. She said, we'll have no more of that talk. And I said, from me or you? And she just thought about it for a while, and she told my dad. Well, you know, what she said is, you little son of a bitch. And my dad came home and said, that little bastard. And I said, you know, you shouldn't say things like that because you're really talking about yourself. And those two just shook their head and they said, we don't know what to do with this kid. And I said, just give me my way and I'll go on about my business. What he gave me was a swift kick right in the posterior. It was loving, though, because when I went out of the room, I heard them just laughing. They say, what are we going to do with this 4-year-old kid? But remember, the humor, the love of it. And there are times during the day where you'll feel this rosy glow come on. You think, God, something feels so good. That's the traveler. That is the inner master saying, we're ready, we're present, what do you want? And you know what the answer is? Nothing. I've got it already. And later on when you want something, it's where are you, where are you, where are you? You know, it's like, lift that bag, tote that bell. It's like, do it yourself. I'm not a slave. You're the slave. You're in conditioned energy. It's like, well, could you do it? It's like, come on, don't play the game. Do spiritual exercises. And while they're busy doing spiritual exercises, the bag's moved. The barge is loaded. And they say, when did that happen? It's like, when you entered into the cooperation that we are all equal authorities with each other, and that we should only have that one thing in common with us, that whoever speaks the truth, that is what we're after. I'll tell you right now, if you're a follower of the truth, then you are undeniably and unquestionably a follower of the mystical traveler, because that very is the essence of truth. It is that very essence. It has nothing else in it but that. And that's why it's so difficult to get a hold of in this world. Truth is such a rare commodity. It's become so relative and so qualified. And I even find it in my staff of saying, well, who said what? And finally, I just go like this. It means that's passed. Let's try the next thing. And we finally come to the idea of, in this level, communication is going to be, at its very best, bad. At its very best, it's going to be bad. I used to tell them, I said, I used to just want perfect communication from you people, just to really open up and say it. I said, now I'll be satisfied if you just do anything, no matter how bad it is. Anything. I'll settle for anything. Just give me anything. Well, we're waiting to see what that'll... That was today's last appeal. We'll have to see what that is. There is only one truth, and that is God. Think about that for a second. Only one truth. There's only one thought, and that is God's thought. There's only one soul, and that's God. There's only a oneness in all things manifesting itself as diverse activity. And that's us. Every one of us, collectively, unilaterally, horizontally, vertically, perpendicularly, 365 degree circle. I know it's 360. That's for the 5% for those who's looking for a mistake. There always has to be something for everybody. Since we've already reached most everyone. Keep in mind this, though. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Berush Beisham.
John Rogers' closing words were Berush Beisham, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.